Good morning, Mr. Strachan.
Morning, Aileen.
Last time we were chatting, you were speaking about being at the Gordon Barracks mm-hmm. with the junior soldiers. Did you stay there for long?
I was there about 5 years until I finished my engagement.
And had it changed anything, you know, within that 5 years? Did the amount of boys they took in or any of the educational things that they did that change at all?
It was still looked upon as a very good school, which the inspectorates of schools visited and adjudged. They were taught music, musical instruments, pipe, drums, bugling, taught to be sort of junior leaders as well. A real mixture. We had both civilian professor and military qualified instructor. The barracks had improved very much for the better. All lovely central heated and beautifully painted, and facilities were there for all to enjoy. And being in the edge of a town, they'd all go off, and for a fare of something like 10p, they could get anywhere in Aberdeen for anything that man wanted.
And did you live on the site of the Gordon Barracks then?
I did initially, until I bought my own house in Newton Hill and then commuted. But I had two houses in there, so overall I'd lived in probably five houses throughout my career in there.
And had things improved, like on the housing side as well, by this time in your career? You know, had you seen a lot of changes? You spoke about how they were improving the barracks themselves. Mm. Was there any changes in the houses, you know?
They maintained a steady policy and programme of improvement. And there was also a new rebuild, or a comparatively new rebuild, and a new sound mess, garages, and things like that. And the older quarter, the old granite blocked houses, they were modernised.
Okay. And did your job change any during these 5 years that you were at Gordon's Barracks?
Not really. I was responsible for all the buildings, the functions, the uniforms, the transport, the feeding, etc. It was you maintained a steady sort of finger on a pulse, which everybody depended upon to ensure that it was a well-run, well-organized establishment.
And you were given promotion during this period as well, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, I got the last, just over 2 years, I was made a lieutenant colonel, and considered that to be the icing on the cake. I couldn't go any further, and I felt very honoured and privileged to be there and do what I was doing in the position I had.
And how did that come about? You know, did someone put you forward for this promotion?
Yes, you have, I think I've covered this before, but you do have annual reports in which you are graded and you are criticised and you are complimented, and you are reported on by at least two people, your commanding officer and then your next senior, the brigadier general, whatever. And wherever you went, you had this constant reporting, and you were then obviously put into a particular block of you're doing well, not so well, good, bad, indifferent. And there weren't many people who got lieutenant colonel in those days, so I felt very privileged that. Different people, different regimental people, and this is, I think, the good thing, that I wasn't only being assessed by Gordon Highlander, I had been assessed by Kings and Scottish Borderers Colonel and two colonels in the Royal Highland Fusiliers, so different regiments, different personalities, who took that little while to get to know you and find out what your worth was, and then I obviously pleased them in some way.
And did you know that this was about to happen before it happened? Did they tell you?
I got a phone call from London one day from the MOD and the chap introduced himself and said, well, I'm pleased to let you know that in the post will be an intimation that you're being elevated. And so I thanked him and floated throughout the barracks for the rest of that day, I think.
I was about to ask how you felt.
Absolutely elated. That I remember my father saying that I would take at least 12 to 14 years to become a sergeant. Well, I got it in 2 years. Then he said you'd be lucky if you finished the sergeant major at 22. When in fact I was a regimental sergeant major by that time. And then anything that I got beyond that to me was a bonus. And I thoroughly enjoyed every position I occupied and the people I served with. And sometimes people say that, how did you get on with the educated officers? And I put it down to my Oxford dialect. And it never failed me.
Okay. And did it make any more differences to your actual job, getting this promotion?
Not a bit, no. You're just expected to continue doing it, maybe doing it a little bit better, perhaps, at times. But no.
And did it make any difference to your uniform as well?
No. Well, you had another pip to put on. That was it. And you probably paid more in mess subs. That's about it.
And did you have a party or anything for...
I remember entertaining. I think I had a lovely big rose bowl in the officer's mess. And I think I filled it with pins and things like that. And we had that one day. Yes, it was an occasion.
Okay. And so, would that have been quite near your retirement, or would that...
No, that was about 1983.
Okay.
2 years before I left.
Okay, and did things just continue in the same manner as they had been doing previously?
Absolutely.
And how did you feel about coming up towards this time where you were about to finish with the army as well?
Well, sad, because at the age of 55 I would categorise the individual as being proficient and experienced and knowledgeable and still very much capable of producing the goods. But unfortunately the army considered and classified you as old at the age of 55. I was still a very capable person at that age.
And were you still keeping yourself quite fit at that time? Because I remembered you saying earlier on, I think you did you run something when you were about 50 or something?
Well, I did a 9 mile bash and a 2 hours carry and something like 40 odd pounds of weight at the combat fitness test. I never missed one right up to the age of 50. And then after that, you were excluded. And you were expected to do your own physical training to maintain a level of fitness.
So you were still quite fit and everything at 55.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then as you did come towards this time when you had to finish with the army, did they start... did you get like any... In society, they would call them maybe like pre-retirement courses or anything. Did you get anything like that?
There was, yes, that was available. Overall, I didn't look upon it as being satisfying. You travelled far to hear somebody speak about how successful it had been, but at that particular time, I know it's changed drastically and very much improved, but I wouldn't have given it very many stars out of 10 at that particular time.
Okay. And what happened when you actually did, finish with the army? What happened then,
Well, they put me on a trailer and wheeled me out and produced a pipe tune for me and that was it.
Was this on your last day?
Yes. And home I went and hung up my hat and then decided that I'd have to do something to occupy the mind, and I became a secretary of a golf club, of Marker Golf Club, And I enjoyed that for a wee while. And after that, I went and became a guide in Drumcastle, which again I found very interesting, meeting a great variety of people. And then there was a vacancy as secretary of the Regimental Association of the Gordon Highlanders, and I was run for that and successfully got it. And I worked with a female assistant. Who helped me in the mornings, and we looked after the welfare cases of the older brethren of the Gordon Highlander, and looked after the various sub units that they had in different places of ex-servicemen who served in the Gordon Highlander, and I did that for 10 years.
And was that here at St. Luke's?
Yes, yes, it was actually in the Ducat. That lovely little building that is now transformed into a sort of AV room, I think, as they call it. But that was the Ducat. And a tremendous historic building. And we used to keep it, it was a hen house at one time, and then a gardener's tool shed, and then we put in a little heater and cleaned it up and painted it. But now I'm pleased to see that it's being looked after. But it was there that we would deal with all the calls. A very historic sort of organised lifestyle.
And did you have to clean it up in that, you know, when you first got it? Did you paint it and things?
Well, the previous occupants had done a little bit, had improved it, and by the time I got there with an acceptable office, I got it carpeted and shell with getting new equipment, office equipment then, and they were getting rid of the old stuff. So, we had some Gordon Highlanders who worked for Shell, and they made us aware, so we got tables, chairs and desks and things.
And did you enjoy it?
Absolutely. Again, dealing with people, dealing with situations. During my service, I had been a family officer, so I'd been in charge of 400 number women and children, etc., and situations. And people who I find fascinating and are all different. It was really a continuance of that. And you're dealing in many cases with people who had known you whilst you served and respected your position. And you investigated all cases of need and helped where it was deemed essential.
Okay, and was there like some money that you could use, you know, if somebody
yes,
needed
them? Yes, yes, we would certainly disburse up to £25,000 per annum. But all of it was, you worked in close cooperation with SAFA, Soldier Sailors Air Force Association, and any organisation like the Army Benevolent Fund, to whom you would go for further financial assistance. There are many agencies, charitable agencies, who are prepared to help, and if you put up a good enough case that would justify the money, then you would get it. But you always made sure that the check you made out was to the SAFA organisation or some organisation who would disburse the money to pay for the problem, whether it be in good chattels or personal situations.
So it wasn't actually to the person themselves?
Oh, no, 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 no. That was too dangerous a thing to do.
And how do you think some of them felt? You know, was it mostly old Gordon Highlanders?
No. Well, yes, they had all served at one time, being connected, or could well have been the widow of the person. And people generally are proud, and some people feel quite embarrassed in having to do this, so you had to strike the balance of your appreciation and wording to them when you spoke to them or wrote to them that we were there to help. And being a family regiment, we continue still to do that.
That's what I wondered, if this embarrassment, you know, some of them, especially as you say, they've been soldiers or soldiers' wives, probably been very proud people, and you know, and I was wondering how the embarrassment might have got them. Maybe even the fact that some of them might have known you, you know, over your time at the army.
They were very appreciative. There's no doubt about that. And the odd letter that you'd get from somebody was reassuring to you that what you were doing was right and justifiable, and you were helping a very deserving case. But by nature,
sorry about that interruption. We were speaking about the cases, the people who were coming to you and how they felt.
It was reassuring to get the little notes of thanks from them and how appreciative they were. And that was the reward that we looked for, really. Kept us going that you're doing good, as it should be done.
And how did you maybe find out about these people? Would they contact you themselves, or would it maybe be someone else who was telling you that, you know...
A variety. No set pattern. The Denarii of Safa played a tremendous part throughout the whole of the United Kingdom. They have agencies of volunteers who hear of problems. So we were dealing with people throughout the whole of the United Kingdom. And you would get proper official questionnaire reports and recommendations and assessments of the responsible person who was compiling the report, and you very much dependent upon what he was saying, and sometimes his recommendation you accepted, sometimes you tweaked it with a little bit of he was a different person, felt differently to his appreciation. But it was a system that was there for consideration, appraisal, and full justification to assist. And as I said earlier, we were greatly assisted by, in addition to SAFA, the Army Benevolent Fund, who would respond within 2 days. Quite a remarkable and efficient organisation.
And did you ever go out and about and see these people?
Yes. I've attended more funerals than I have done weddings. I've been to so many different hospitals, homes, etc. And yes, all very interesting.
Okay.
And then we would lay on. We started a widow's lunch, which started off with coffee in this building, and then developed into a proper luncheon in one of the transport clubs downtown. And it's still being done on the first Saturday of November any year, when the girls come from all over the northeast and have pretty party frocks and their hair all done, and we give them a meal, give them some music, and give them a gift from Santa and that sort of thing, and a sing song, and off they go.
And in your time when you were doing this,
I'm still doing it.
Oh, you're still doing it?
Well, in a sort of quiet the way, I'm no longer the secretary, but I'm the president of the Aberdeen group, and I attend all the widows' lunches, and I still get phone calls from people, because we used to send Christmas cards, still send Christmas cards and birthday cards to all the widows, known widows and elder brethren. And when we were much more wealthier, we used to give £10 to every man over 80 years of age, for example. And the postcards we used were the Duchess Jean and the horse. So we used to say that Duchess Jean is the bearer of many, many good wishes to you, and that sort of business. And the old dears loved it.
And how many of them do you have at the moment?
Hundreds, I would say.
And how many would come to the lunch?
This last year, we probably had just under 70, whereas we obviously, a lot of them are beginning to fade, and the younger ones don't feel that they should join too early, perhaps. It's one of these time symbol things. but we'd over 100 at one time.
And are they quite old now, most of them?
Getting, yes, yes. A variety, quite a variety of ages.
I didn't realise you still did that. And so when you were still, you know, the regimental secretary, when you were doing that, was there any other aspects of the Gordon's life that you were still involved with, apart from the welfare? You know, was there anything like, well, you've spoken about the widow's lunch, but what about like any other reunions or anything?
Yes, I'd attend, my wife and I would go to Inverness, we'd go to Bucky, we'd go to Fraserburgh, we'd go to Edinburgh, we'd go to Aberdeen. We still do to their annual dinner dances, and I was a trustee of the association, and now I look after, I'm the honorary president of the Aberdeen group, so I still go to, they have a dinner in April, they have a dinner dance in December. God bless my wife who followed me throughout and attended these things, and it's always, they're very appreciative, they're very hospitable, just lovely people.
And you know, you're describing all that, and you know, you're describing the dinner dances and all the other things, so do you think it's still quite a close-knit group once they've left the Gordons, that they've actually left the regiment?
Yes, and it seems as the older they become, the more sincere they become. One can hardly define what the age is when one should start to be that, but yes, I'd like to see more of it, but then again, the British Legion are suffering, as is other, many other clubs, so inadequate attendance is a different thing.
And did the old soldiers sometimes help as well, you know, with the money that you might need for others, if you like?
Yes, you would get donations from people. However small, they're constant and genuine thoughts behind it to help others less fortunate than they.
And when you were working as the regimental secretary as well, was there a museum here at that time?
Yes, a much, much smaller one. It's been transformed. It's like night and day. But it was a smaller building. But yes, we had a headquarters and a secretary and a museum.
And had you anything to do with that side of it?
Not really.
Okay.
I was just part of the team, a cog in the wheel that went round.
Mm-hmm. And was it mostly ex-Gordon Highlanders that were here then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
Okay. And so once you'd finished your 10 years, you know, with the being the regimental secretary, did you just feel like retiring then? Is that what you?
Well, I thought that at the age of 65, I think I was. I'm beginning to show my age now, but yes, I'd given 10 years. I was 65, and I felt that at that particular time of change, it was opportunistic for me to make way for some younger lad and still be able, as a trustee, to advise and help, and that I still like to think that I do.
So, with being a trustee, were you involved with some of the meetings about, you know, both the regimental side and also the museum? About
that museum, okay, quite separate.
Okay, so are you still involved in being a trustee?
No, I finished that too, but I'm still looked upon as a person who attends the things, or who is available to speak or be questioned.
As here. Okay. And so you went from the regimental side onto like being a trustee. So was that more like meetings that you would have to attend there?
Trustees met certainly twice a year, and they would assess the performance and the financial accounts and the way ahead, and regulated and audited the system annually. and then we'd have a meeting which was open for all to see, to hear, to attend and propose what they wished.
Okay, and you're still actively involved in the museums, aren't you?
Yes, I do research at present with the General, General Subject Graham, and Mike Blair, the Professor, and Robin Lindsay Gordon, who was my platoon commander in Malaya in 1952. So we are currently going through the album and identifying the individuals, and the bad habit of yesteryear members of the regiment was that they would submit a photograph but no name. We are trying to rectify that and to regulate them, and to the General is writing where possible about the individuals, so that here and after it would be on a par with what you're doing, that anybody who wishes to identify the grandpa when he served in Malaya and such and such, they'll be able to say, well, go here, do this, do that, and you'll get the photographic evidence of the person you're concerned in, and perhaps a little story about him. And I think that's developing very well, and as long as the General and I remain alive, you know, we'll continue as long as we can in so doing.
And do you still see some of the other men? You know, is there still these dinner dances and
yes,
lunches
yes,
and things?
Yes. We went to one, and we went to the Widow's Luncheon last November and December. And they had one of each then, and they have another dinner in April this year, and so on.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Strachan.
My pleasure.
Thank you.